Jim Taylor back on WMJ and WMJ.com. Pleased to have a Hall of Fame high school football coach on with us today, Mike Lawler, entering his 22nd year at Stillman Valley High School. They had some great games in the late 90s and early 2000s with Aledo and Rock Ridge. And how this conversation came about, I got an email from Coach Lawler. He heard the interview from Brad Dixon. Said a lot of interesting topics were touched on. I'm privileged that you listened, Coach, but there needs to be a lot of conversation about high school football these days, right?
There really does. You know, things are, in my opinion, they're changing a little too quick in this state. I don't think some people have thought things out real well. And then just in general, the overall state of football, you know, is in a little turmoil right now. I think it's starting to level off a little bit, but, you know, you start tweaking things too quickly, and I think you take one of the, you know, and I'm biased, of course, but I think you take one of the, you know, the greatest things of high school sports, high school football on Friday nights, and you might just have spun it in a way that might not be able to be reversed and could really be, you know, long-term a real bad thing.
So you started in 1998, and we're 22 years forward, 2019. So I ask you, if I do my math, 22 years forward, 2041, where do you think Illinois high school football is going to be at in 22 years?
You know, I really worry about it. I've thought, you know, say even 10, 15 years down the line, are we potentially looking at something where there's barely a game going? I certainly hope not. You know, not just high school football, but I think if you really kind of look across the board, just sports numbers, participation numbers in general are real, real shaky in different areas, you know, and I think we've entered this age of specialization, and then, you know, throw, you know, I think the video game thing in there, and then throw, I think, social media and cell phone addiction in there as well. You just don't see, in my opinion, people as active as what they once were. So, you know, boy, I sure hope it's still going at that point and going strong, but I think you'd be naive not to be concerned about it.
And I know when the concussion protocol came along, and the game is safer as it has evolved, there's no question about it, but see, the thing that we get into here, in my opinion, is now I see a lot of coaches, they'll share these studies that say, hey, you know, football isn't that dangerous. And, you know, this comes in the aftermath of football is dangerous. You know, all those people sharing the stories early. And there's a thing in life that they call confirmation bias. And it doesn't matter what you share with people, if they find something that aligns with kind of their belief, whether it's accredited or not, the information, you're not going to be able to change their mind. In my opinion, that's one of the problems that football is dealing with. And you talk about specialization. I know when you started in probably the late 1990s, early 2000s, there just wasn't a lot of other things you could do in the fall other than play your fall sports. You want to play football, you played football. You want to play soccer, you play soccer. If you wanted to run cross country or play golf, you played those sports. But now it's all these other year-round sports allow those kids that opportunity to do something in the fall. But the genie's out of the bottle now. And I think nobody can answer, well, how do we go about combating that?
Yeah, I 100% agree. As you said, you know, that nothing stays the same. But, you know, what has happened is, as you said, you know, the genie's out of the bottle and things are going on. There's other options and stuff. So I think about the best thing you can do, and we've been pretty fortunate here at Stillman, is if you can get your varsity coaches on board as much as you can together and, you know, encourage one another to have all our kids playing as many things as we can, and then also explain, you know, to them, this is what happens if we all decide to go into sport A. You know, sports B and C will suffer, and sports C and A and B will suffer. And I think what you have to realize then as a varsity coach is that maybe in the short term, if you've got a group of kids playing your sport, it helps you. But the second that flips and they go into a different sport and that becomes the one that they're all into for a couple years, now you're in a lot of trouble. So for whatever little, you know, short-term gain you might gain by pushing it for your kids, you know, you better be real careful because it can flip real quick on you. So I think that's about the best you can do with that type of thing. And hopefully, you know, if you can kind of get that implemented at an early age, maybe you can head off some of that stuff and keep a large chunk involved. There's still going to be those kids that are going to specialize, but hopefully you can keep the masses being involved in several sports.
What does football need to answer? I mean, asking you to look 22 years out, again, the 22 years for you, you started in 1998, coaching into 2019, so we're asking you to, you know, fast forward 22 years. So what, as you look at it, I mean, what does the sport really need to answer to sustain?
You know, I'm not quite sure overall because I think they're getting there, you know, on the concussion stuff and whatnot. I feel like that is kind of leveled off to a certain degree. I think as more and more information gets out there, and I think that's been better. You know, the one thing that I think maybe because, you know, we had a few years back, our numbers started dropping a little bit. So I started calling around to different coaches that had sustained great numbers. Like, say, for example, Jim Unruh down there at Illini West and a few others. And, you know, the one thing that I found, and I think Coach Dixon actually talked about this in his podcast, is that for high school-wise, I think you better take a real strong look at what you're doing at in the summer. You know, how much summer stuff are you doing? And I know not everybody would be in favor of this, but I think for high school-wise, if you could cut down, you know, make it fair, but cut down the amount of contact days, that's the one common theme I found with guys that were able to maintain numbers is they just weren't doing as much. And I think there comes a certain point, freshman, sophomore, junior year, when you've got those helmets and pads on all summer long and it's 90-degree heat and this and that, it just isn't that fun, you know? So that's the one thing I guess I would say to maintain it is the whole less is more idea. And I know it's kind of hard to get there. We had started doing a little too much. Our numbers started dwindling. As soon as we backed off, they started going back up again. So I guess that's the one thing I could point to right now. Otherwise, I'm not sure if it's just such a heavy societal thing right now with football in this regard, is that it's, to me, football's tough. You know, it's a hard thing. You got to go out and practice and this and that. And you don't get to play a game every other night and things like that. So it's a little different deal. And I think we're getting maybe a touch softer in society, and we're definitely getting into this kind of game time belief where I think every day has to be a game. We've kind of lost the whole idea of that you need to practice, no matter what sport it is. You know, that practice is where you get a lot better versus, you know, you line up and you play that next game all the time, and you don't really have to, you know, have the discipline to practice. So,
well, and that's that's my belief of what football is really behind the eight ball, because kids are conditioned. I'm not going to be ultra critical of travel sports because my kids play travel sports, but I've said this: football loses the games to practice ratio every time. They're never going to win that. But all these other sports, especially at a young age, where you're talking about whatever the travel league is, you're playing. Like you mentioned, you're playing maybe 4 to 5 games, 6 games on a weekend or 7 games or 8 games, and then maybe having a practice, one practice during a week, two maybe, if you're lucky. And then you go to your, you know, they consider going to your specialization coach for whatever the sport is on top of that. So, I mean, that's the other thing. Football's never going to win that. And that's what concerns me about the future of the sport. Because the games to practice ratio in today's culture, it just doesn't work out for the kids, in my opinion.
I agree, and I think we're living in more and more of this kind of instant gratification society, if you will. And so, you know, the concept of investing a full week of work into something, and I'm not guaranteed, you know, 50-50 shot we're going to win on Friday, and then I got to do it the next week. I don't get to just keep jumping back in, and I'll, you know, sooner than later, you're going to find somebody that you're going to beat during that course of the week and, feel good about yourself and that sort of thing. So I think that that definitely plays in, and I know speaking with say coaches in the basketball arena and the baseball arena, it's frustrating to them too, because in some ways the whole idea, for example, say a basketball coach, a kid just going out and shooting 1,000 jump shots, you know, that's not kind of the thing to do, right? It's go out and play in that next tournament type of thing where maybe you get 20 jump shots the whole night. And so it's I know it's a frustrating thing on a lot of those coaches level too, as well as just the concept of practicing, which really is what makes you better, is kind of becoming a lost art.
And I know too, if you have a winning program, right, you get the credibility. And it's easier, I don't know if easy is fair to use that word, but it's to retain kind of what you have. It's not as challenging as maybe a perennial program that is losing, and you try to turn that culture around. So then, like, the coach is maybe forced to go out of his element and maybe has to walk the halls and recruit kids to play football. Are you hearing or seeing more and more of that? And I mean, have you been forced to say, well, I'm not saying beg, but do you have to go now today and ask some kids, hey, would you like to play football? Are you at that point there?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, and that is something, you know,
That really surprises me. I can't believe that.
So what we've got here, and I was recently just speaking to somebody about this, I happen to teach eighth grade history, and we've got all the district our size. I see all the boys, so I'm in an ideal situation. I get to see them every day, and I wait until about that last month or two, if you will, of the school year, and then we start, you know, talking to them a lot about it. And I've really felt every year we pull in an extra, whatever, 5, 6, 7 kids that at least give it a shot that freshman year. And without being in that slot, I think it'd be difficult to do. And I don't think it's as much, you know, say being anti-football or things. It's just not doing really anything. And they just hadn't participated. And, you know, a whole nother angle that we're starting to see now too is that sports are becoming such a financial situation for people. You know, if you didn't have the money to play the travel and this and that, I think you kind of got lost or just kind of gave up on things. And so I've always felt that's one good thing football's got going for it, outside of the kind of that, you know, whatever the school's activity fee is. You can jump in and play a little bit because it's only going to be offered pretty much through the school type of thing. So I think there's just some kids that just didn't get involved in athletics because of the money situation now. And so, yeah, without a doubt, you know, done that for now years here, but definitely in the last, say, 3 to 5 years, it's become a big part of my spring, is just trying to get kids interested and coming on out and giving it a shot.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the one thing that football has on their side, that I'll say high school football, is the Friday nights. They maintain that. There's always hope because they football's always got that right. Friday night social event during the fall, they have that. They have one up in terms of the sport that way. You know, I mean that as the ultimate respect to you, to say I'm surprised you have to ask kids to go out for football out there, because I know the proud program and proud tradition that you have. But do you think, you know, when you think of like old school football in the 50s and 60s, you know, I'm begging these kids to go out, you know, do you think there's some in your profession that are resistant to doing that, and then in the long run, you know, long story short, the participation numbers are declining because of that, because maybe that kid needs a little prodding to play football, if you see what I mean.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. You know, and I've been there too, you know, where you kind of, it's almost a prideful thing, you know, that I don't beg or this or that. And I think you kind of got to go away from begging more as, can you maybe encourage, open a door, give them something that they've never thought about doing before. And, you know, maybe also on those lines, as I was kind of thinking about our conversation here, you know, I think you got to kind of find ways nowadays, can you do something else with your program too? So it's not just about the games and practice. It's almost like they're kind of looking for something more. So, you know, can you do some team dinners, or can you maybe do a few things on the side, maybe take them out bowling or something like that during the 2-a-days, just something else that maybe pulls in those couple extra kids that aren't the maybe the necessarily the greatest players, but they can still feel like they're having a fun time doing this and still being part of the group, being part of the team, and things along those lines. So I think you just kind of got to start thinking more and more outside of the box about how do you keep the kids' interest level, and how do you make the sport maybe something more than just simply the playing on the field too.
And then I'm curious, where do you stand with like junior high football, youth football? I'm talking about tackle contact football at those levels. Good for the sport, bad for the sport? Have you changed or adapted your opinion to any of that? Because I've heard it both ways, and that's another argument that I don't know. Is junior high and youth football good for high school football, or is it counter to it? Where do you stand on that?
You know, I think it, you know, depending on who's involved, it can go either way. You know, we've had groups that were, because generally speaking, you're looking at, you know, heavily, you know, the parent volunteers and the parents of those kids involved. And so if you can work with them and they're willing to do things the right way, and I think you de-emphasize the winning at all cost, and also try to find some way so that three parents that are running it are the, you know, their kids never come off the field and they are for sure the quarterback and this and that and everything else. You know, if you can kind of head that stuff off, then I think it can be a good thing. And if you don't, it can be a very, very detrimental thing as well. And I know, and I don't know if it's changed, but I know down there was in Carthage, they didn't have junior mm-hmm. high football. I know Jim Unruh just thought it was the best thing. And I think there's something to that, you know, that they knew they only had those 4 years in high school, and he didn't have to break bad habits. He didn't have to reconvince kids to give it another try and stuff. So, you know, probably somewhere in between. I do think with the sports there, you know, getting much below fifth or sixth grade, I think is kind of crazy. They can barely stand up wearing a helmet and shoulder pads at that point, and that's not fun for them. So, you know, as I said, a little bit of both, but you know, it's got to be done the right way.
Yeah, and it's always interesting when I talk to a lot of coaches and a lot of people that get in the profession. And you know, when I talk to people, I want to be like Unruh, and, you know, run. People say, well, he only runs three plays. I want to run this. I want to be like Welter, run this complicated offensive system. I want to be like Lawler, run the midline veer. And I always back up and I say, nah, man, no. It's not about that. It's about that at the end. But at the beginning, I always tell that kids are smart enough to know if the coach is in it for them, if the coach cares about them. You know, because it's the guys I mentioned there, they get it. You can talk about strategy, but I think a lot of young guys get it wrong where they think strategy first, and then they think about the other part, the connection to the kids. You have the first win you need in coaching is the kids need to know you're in it for them. And if you don't figure that out, you can't run the Waller system. You can't run the Unruh system. You can't run the Welter system, because those type of guys figure it out first, that they have to have the connection with the youth that they are coaching. I know that's true.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. You've got to have that ability, whatever it is, to be able to relate to young people and make them feel important, and it needs to be genuine as well. And the guys I've known that have done so on, it's just interesting. Those names that you've mentioned are just happening. Some of the guys I've gotten to be friends with over the years, they've all got that ability to talk with kids, and I've watched them interact. And most of them have just a great sense of humor, too. They make kids laugh, so kids want to be around them. And then besides for that, oh, by the way, they happen to coach football, and they're really good at it. And then along with the really good, forget the play part, what they are so good at is they know the littlest little details of their system so that they can teach the Joe average kid to be successful within their system. You know, talking, Jim Unruh and I coached together probably 20 years ago in one of the Shrine games, and he was talking on in any playing, and yeah, they supposedly ran three or four plays or whatever it was, but he could tell you exactly what went wrong on that play and exactly why it went wrong on a play, and he could correct the kid and help him out. And that's, I think, what kids are looking for, is a chance to be successful, and if I'm not, can you help me fix it versus just simply yelling at me to do better, and I don't even know what I did wrong in the first place. So I think that's those guys are just some of the best teachers, period, that you're going to find out there as well.
Yeah, and I know their timing and their off-the-ball movement in that system he ran was such poetry. But it was always so frustrating from an opposition standpoint, saying, I think that wingback is leaving just a little bit early. But apparently he never was leaving early. And I like to get into, like, the essence, like, of high school sports and the names you were mentioning. So, I think about it, like, before a game and okay, so you got, you know, Lawler on one side, and he's putting his headset on, and they're putting the ball on the tee, right? And then he looks across the sideline, and Unruh's across the sideline. He's putting his headsets on. And you're like, oh, yeah, man. So, like, we're going to get this on today. The essence of high school sports, as I just described that. But, I mean, that's what I still have hope for the game. So those are the cool things still about the game. And I know you have to get stoked for moments like that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, what probably everybody coaches somewhat for at the end of the day. And I've said this to a few people, that I don't think there is anything that you can't almost really explain it, but the electricity before a big-time high school sporting event, you know, whether it be, I've always said, like, from the quarters, the semis, and the state finals, there is nothing like the roar when the team comes out on the field. It's inexplainable, you know, and been to, say, the state basketball finals and stuff like that, the same thing. And so when that happens, you know, what it does for a community, and as you said, that those few moments leading up to the kickoff, you can't buy that stuff. And so I hope with that, you know, as you said, things will keep going and keep going in the right direction, because, boy, if we ever lose it, we've really lost just a wonderful part of our, you know, cultures and our small-town communities.
You heard Brad Dixon when he was talking about, like, self-reflection and self-evaluation and the profession. When I asked him, you know, 2019 Brad Dixon compared to, you know, 2003 Brad Dixon or whatever he started, he goes, well, 2019 Brad Dixon would fire 2003 Brad Dixon. I mean, is continuing education or, you know, self-evolvement, is that, I mean, have you, when you look back to 1998 to 2019, and you look back and you scratch your head and say, man, I needed to change here or needed to change there. Have you had some of those, like, self-reflective moments where you've said, I'm glad I changed my ways a little bit?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, same thing. You know, would have fired myself along the line as well. And I think, you know, what else happens along the journey then as well, you know, I eventually, you know, got married and have your own kids and stuff, and you start seeing things very, very differently. And you also probably understand things a lot better too, that, you know, right or wrong, when you're looking out on the field, you watch your own child, you know, you start to understand why a parent may see their son as the greatest thing ever when they're not, because he is the greatest thing ever that's happened to them and their lives and stuff. And yeah, without a doubt, we've I think evolved quite a bit. It's kind of funny, because I get a lot of former players are involved down in our junior tackle and our flag leagues, and so they'll stop by practice every once in a while. And the number one thing they all say is, "Boy, you've gotten soft," you know. And the players today would not agree with that whatsoever. You know, the old guys are probably right to a degree, and the younger guys. Be interesting to see what they have to say in a while too. So. Yeah, you just change. I think as you coach longer and longer, you get smarter too. And so I think sometimes when you're young, about the only thing you know how to do is to try to get them to play harder and push them harder, because you don't know what you don't know at that point. And so that part of you kind of has to trump the other part, because you don't know enough to teach them more and stuff. And now it's, you know, knowledge base. Maybe you can kind of motivate them a little bit better that way. But yeah, it's changed big time over the years.
Yeah, you talk about, like, the true appreciation. And I can talk in my job. I've been doing it since 1990, you know, from the broadcasting standpoint. And I have a true appreciation for the kids we cover in our area. You know, and I reflect back on, you know, some of the early days where I'm talking, you know, about 30 years ago. And you run into, well, call them kids, but, I mean, they're adults, you know, adults with kids and, you know, lives, and this, like, true appreciation you have for that connection that you had with them, like, well, when I was broadcasting them. But I know when you were talking about kids in your program that come back or help out or whatever, you run across them when they're back in town. I don't know how to put it, but appreciation, you know, when you talk to coaches and they have this great fondness for the kids that came through early. And I don't know if it's like a melancholy feeling or like reflective, but you know what I mean? I mean, that's when you know you're in the right, you chose the right profession, I guess is what I'm saying. When you talk about like you started in 98, so you run into those dudes from 98, you have like this true appreciation saying, man, thank you so much for playing for me back in 1998. Maybe I didn't tell you at the time, but I really appreciate it and I miss you and I'm so thankful you played for me.
Without a doubt, yeah. It's funny you said, I just bumped into somebody here the other day that I hadn't seen in probably 12 years or so, and there's just an instant bond, you know, and it's difficult to explain. Some of it has to do with maybe some of the better teams that you've had, but also I bumped into teams that, by record-wise, we maybe weren't the greatest team, but, man, we worked awfully hard just to get there, and in just a second, you're transported back to that time period, and one of the hardest things I've always found is that you spend so much time together, and then you hopefully get in the playoffs, and then a snap of a fingers when it's, you know, if you've been blessed to go all the way and or if you get beat in the first round, it's over, you know, and you just, you don't have that time together anymore. And as you said, it's really hitting me, you know, with the Hall of Fame thing here this spring, you look back and just think about, you know, what if we dropped in here and those kids hadn't been here? They were so willing to work and they were very talented and stuff. And at the time, you think it's a lot about yourself and you did this, when in reality it was far more they did that for you in return. Very, very humbling, and it's wonderful to get around them, see them, what they're doing with their lives now. And for a lot of them, you know, they're very open about what either football and or just sports in general did for them as far as the work ethic, and they find themselves saying the same speeches to their kids about this and that they heard from their coaches. So maybe in the end a little something did get passed on there, but it's wonderful to bump into those guys. Really is.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. You know, I think about the 22 years, so we talk about strength and conditioning and speed and how that has, like, evolved so much in for 22 years isn't really a long time span, but how much is that in that 22 years has that evolved? You know, I've talked to some dudes that have come in here that coached back in the 80s or 70s, and they talked about you know taking salt tablets, which is the worst possible thing you could do, you know, after some of these like summer workouts or these conditioning things, and how much that has changed. What has been the biggest adjustment that you look at, like, from strength and conditioning from 98 to, like, 2019, where you think, man, maybe back in 99 we shouldn't have been – science probably says we were doing it a little bit the wrong way then. I mean, have you adjusted with that too?
Yeah, we've done some things. We were pretty fortunate when we got started, happened to spend some time right away out of the box and went out to – a guy named Boyd Epley, who was with Osborne and those guys, and they were kind of ahead of the curve there a little bit as far as that goes. But I think, you know, just the stuff, you know, as far as, say, like hydration, you know, you go back in our day, there was one bottle out there and everybody get a sip because you didn't want to, you know, be getting cramping up or sick. And yeah, the salt tablet thing was unbelievable when you think about it back then. You know, make sure you load yourself up with salt so that you stay hydrated. I mean, and we all, it just seemed like it was the right thing to do. So I think probably today is maybe the biggest thing I see. In some ways, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, is that, you know, the flexibility, you know, how to injury prevention, you know, how to treat things. We do, I think, a far better job of that overall now, where, you know, back in the days of, you know, rub some dirt on it and this and that,
yeah,
and, you know, probably got some kids pretty banged up beyond what they should have been. You know, we've come light years in that in 20 years.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you about a couple of other things, too. And, you know, 22 years in today's environment coaching, it is really an exception, you know, and not the rule. It's 20, you're at the upper end of coaching tenure in today's environment. I guess if you look through like the IHSA directory right now and said how many dudes have been coaching over 20 years. I don't think there'd be too many, you know, active coaches. But then I think 22 years at the same school, and I know there wouldn't be too many over 20 at the same school in today's environment, talking about actively. So how have you done it? 22 years all at one school. The you must love Stillman Valley, and Stillman Valley must love Lawler.
Well, you know, the school's been very the system, the people as a whole have been very good to me, and been very good to my family, and have treated us very well. You know, and that being said, it hasn't all been rosy by any stretch, and you know, you've always got this issue or that issue and that type of thing. So I think as much as anything, you try to, you know, try to be as honest and upfront with people as you possibly can be. And then I think the other thing that helps a little bit is I call it keeping your circle kind of small. You know, I know a lot of people here, you know an incredible amount of people here, but the amount of really close friends I have are pretty small, you know. And I think you kind of got to keep that closed a little bit. I've had a great staff. I've got several guys that have been with me for 20-plus years, and that's helped a lot. And then the one other, you know, like I was going to give a young coach a bit of advice is I think the more you don't pay attention to all the gossip and all that type of stuff, because trust me, it doesn't matter if you're a 500 team or if you want a state title. There are people that are complaining about you. And so for that reason, like I don't have any social media accounts. You know, I think it's great and stuff, but at the same point, there's always going to be somebody out there saying something. And mm-hmm. if you let that eat you up, I see that was where a lot of guys kind of get out because of just the external stuff. So if you can find a way to kind of isolate yourself from it, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I do think that helps a little bit, and you know, just try to keep your priorities kind of simple and straight to the point of what should truly make you happy in life and what should not, and try to, you know, stay away from that other stuff. That helps a little bit. But as I start off with it, to be really fair, people have been very good to me here. And as you said, too, I happened to be looking at it the other day, too, and it doesn't really hit you until you start looking around. Like, there's just not too many that, as you said, have done it now for 20 anymore. So, you know, maybe 10, 15 is the new, you know, long-term standard, and a few guys make it a bit longer. And then you got a guy like Pavosha down at Sterling Newman that did whatever was 40 years.
Yeah.
I can't fathom that. Yeah, been a great run. Been very, very fortunate.
Yeah, and doing it at the same school, too, is so impressive. And I know when I was talking to you off the air setting this up, I mean, you still have the passion in the hunger. So you still believe in high school football and believe in the mission. So that's the one thing you know when you blow the whistle on whatever the first day of practice is, August 12th or whatever it is this year, that you still have the hunger and the drive to say, I love this game, and I want the Stillman Valley Cardinals to put the ball on the tee. And I'm looking here, week one, let's see, Stillman Valley plays, they play Dixon. So they're going to put the ball on the tee, and you said we better be ready to take on the Dukes on that Friday night of week one, August 30th. I mean, you still have the passion and the drive and the love of the game to say, I'm nowhere near thinking about, you know, saying I'm going to step away from this game. I love it too much still.
Yeah, I've got a son coming up in a few years, and I'd love to be able to keep doing it through him. And actually, my daughter, she's 8, 9. She plays in our flag league. She's the only girl that plays in the flag league, but she enjoys it. Who knows on that there. But yeah, from what everybody I've talked to, it's kind of you'll know when it's time. And what I've noticed, say, the last few years is that after the season, it takes a while longer to kind of recover, both mentally and, for that matter, honestly, physically. You know, the season takes a lot out of guys, and I don't think people probably realize that. But if you did like a before and after picture of some coaches, I remember seeing Coach Welter there in the state championship game last year and talking to him afterwards. I mean, he was just absolutely spent, you know, by that point. And every year it takes a little while to kind of get things going again. But I think what you find with some of us is I don't think we really got a whole lot of other hobbies, if you will. Football kind of happened to be our hobby. And so if you're lucky enough to do your hobby for a job, that's a pretty good situation.
Yeah, and I need to tell you, for our local audience, because I want to get a couple of comments from you about the district scheduling that's in play right now and a couple of other issues. But I do want to, I think about, man, it's been that long ago, some of these games, 20 years ago. John Oshide, who does most of the Aledo and Mercer County games, we always talk about what we do in the high school football season on Thursday night. We signed on in 1979, so we have archive basically of every game we've ever broadcast. So we do a classic game of the week on Thursday night, an old game involving whoever. And we always talk about, well, what's probably the greatest game ever played? Like, for example, like at Pratt Memorial Field. And it's tough for some of us to stay here in Aledo that maybe the greatest game ever played on that field was a game the beloved Green Dragons lost, and that was that 1999 slugfest between Stillman Valley and Aledo. And of course, that was the year after Aledo won the state title. And then I think about the classic game that you guys played over in Edgington in 98 that could have set up a potential state title game between Aledo and Stillman Valley, but Rock Ridge hangs on for a 28-26 win. You've had some memorable games against the local schools down this way. And I tell you, that game in 99 was a classic down. Well, and the one at Rock Ridge, too. But those were both classic games in this area.
Without a doubt. Well, the 98 one, that was my first year as head coach. So I was 26, I think, at the time. And for those that were there, it's a long time ago. Long story short, Rock Ridge stopped us on a two-point conversion with about 20 seconds left. It would have put the game in overtime, and we'd come down back from a lot. And I just remember that bus ride home just thinking, did I just blow my chance of getting to a state title game? It was a very legitimate, thought that I know a lot of guys, you go your whole career, and you get one shot at it, and we were a yard and a half away or whatever of having a shot at it there, and then you turn around a year later. I think what was so neat about that year later with Aledo was they had won the state, and then they turned around and beat Rock Ridge in the state title, and I remember going to that game thinking, we're going to be in pretty good shape. We had a lot of our team coming back, and then, if I remember right, Aledo had like 8 or 9 juniors starting on each side of the ball, and they win the thing, and so for the next 365 days, basically, Aledo's sitting out there, and that's who you're going to have to go through, and that Michael O'Brien, just an absolute man-child they had in the backfield, and a few of those other guys, just remember the names off, I think it was a Blazer, and there's some Dixons and stuff like that on that team. And what I remember most about that game, there was two things. Number one is that it was just game on right from the first play, and unbelievable intensity. And number two, on a funnier note, I remember we took the field, and our lead kid going through the chute tripped, and all the players piled up on him like a bad clown car thing, and the Aledo crowd was just roaring laughing, and I'm sitting on the sideline thinking, we have built up for a year to this thing, and we can't even get through the chute clean. How in the world is this game going to go? But, yeah, and you talk to just about anybody that was there that day, they'll say the same thing. Might have been the greatest high school game they ever saw. It was an amazing, amazing game.
Yeah, and people will say, as the Dragons lose by a point that game, I know – everybody says, well, that clearly was the state title game, and it occurred in the quarterfinals that year, because I see you gave up 6 points then in the semifinals on to the state finals, where you shut out Macon Meridian. So, before we let Mike Lawler leave us again, entering his 22nd year, he's inducted into the Illinois High School Football Coaches Association Hall of Fame last spring, went in. I look at the Big Northern, you're in a 10-team division conference, and the foundation looks pretty strong because you have the connections with like Oregon and Byron are there, and Genoa Kingston and Winnebago. So as far as districts are concerned, there's been a lot of, in our part of the state, with conference affiliation, been a long, strange ride. I assume districts probably are not as receptive to that because you got a good thing going where you're at.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it in a couple different ways. And at the same point, you can see something's going to have to be done here. That these conferences are breaking up left and right. I personally think the bigger issue is in some ways the 5 wins to get in. I think that's what's breaking things up. And I'm not sure if people really thought this out. If districts 100%, solve that problem. You know, if you're in these 8-team districts and only the top four get in, I keep thinking about like a league up in that or the corner of the state there where you have, say, Dakota, Lena Winslow, Forreston, and EPC. These are perennial quarter semifinal teams. If you get stuck in that group, you may never get to the playoffs, you know, even if you've got winning records and so on. I think you throw the travel thing in there a little bit too. I mean, some of the ones we've been looking at, our travel goes up. It's like our closest game is 45 minutes to an hour. We're going to be in a little deal for a little bit that I think we're going to be up in the 4A, so we will lose Byron, Oregon, Winnebago, our three longest rivals. Now, granted, we can try to figure it out. We can play a couple of them in crossovers, but we lose our rivalry games and things. And I know, I think there's, you know, maybe some ways to do something here. I threw out, and this is just something I thought, I think in some ways with doing the full 8 levels of districts, you get yourself a little pigeonholed because there's just not enough teams in certain parts of the state to fill out a 7A or a 3A or whatever. And so now people are having to travel long distances. Do you maybe make it more like a 1A, 2A district, a 3A, 4A. So at most you're playing up one classification. You can still keep, I think, most of your rivalries and still play similar size schools. You know, I think there's some things got to be looked at there a little bit. We'll see what plays out. But there's an awful lot of change going on right now in high school Illinois football, and I'm not sure we're quite ready for it all.
Well, and you bring up a good point. Now, you know, I look at the districts in our area, but it's the enrollment that supersedes everything. It's not really districts, in my opinion. It's the enrollment supersedes the district, in my opinion, the geography of it. You know, you're playing the classification, and that's the one concern I have with that. I'm in favor of districts just because I want to see local teams play local teams, if that can possibly happen. Now, your situation in the Big Northern is perfect. You don't need a district because your people have got it right with the foundation of that conference. And Stillman Valley and Byron need to play every year. There's no and see, that's the thing about when you look at what's going to save football or what's going to help football. You know, you have these contiguous districts that are maybe not the exact same enrollment. I'm talking about small school football here, but if you're, you know, 2A, you should be able to play a 3A team, whatever. If you're 1A, you play 2A team, whatever. To keep the geographic rivals on the schedule, so the fan, you know, the fan that lives here in town that's 67 years old, and they had a kid play 20 years ago, and they're trying to figure out, well, why isn't Aledo playing Rock Ridge tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because they're not in the same conference, and now they're not in the same district. They're not in the same enrollment. So it's like, can I explain to my mother why we're not playing?
Yeah.
And you can't do it easily. You just got to say, they got to play, because people will go to the games. And that's, to me, the thing that football misses out on, too, is you got to get the rival schools got to play because you only get 9 regular season games. But Coach, I don't know how you go about doing that, whether it be through districts. Can it happen? Maybe not. But then can it happen through conference affiliation in other parts of the state? No, it's not happening in conference affiliation because rival schools that are contiguous don't play one another. That's the complication with the whole thing. But I mean, the local rivals in football need to play one another on Friday nights to help the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, I just, as you're saying that, I know one of the possibilities I saw, for example, had us playing, I think it was North Chicago, you know, and is the average fan here going to be fired up about coming and seeing North Chicago versus Byron, you know? And Byron's had our number the last few years, and they're going to be loaded again this year. You know, that's good, though. That thing, it'll be 3 or 4 deep around the whole track, and it is just an electric atmosphere there. And all of a sudden, in theory, in a couple of years, we don't have that. As you were kind of saying, I'm not quite sure I've got the answer, and that's kind of a, you know, a cop-out, if you will, in a way. But maybe my answer is, I think we maybe need to slow down a little bit and think a little bit about this here. How can we try to have the best of both worlds, because I don't think we necessarily have that or are close to having that right now.
Well, and as you explain, in the Stillman Valley Byron situation, here's what happens. One, kids want to play in the game, right? And if they don't play in the game, and they're students, what do they want to do? They want to go to the game.
Exactly.
I mean, it's as they say, everybody uses it, the term win-win. I mean, to me, the opinion is win-win is the rivalry, local rivalry games. The students go to that. The kids get hyped, and they want to play and participate and be a part of that maybe a little more on Friday nights. And then the indirect fan that doesn't have a kid in the school anymore, they'll go to see, as you mentioned, they'll go on the Friday. If they go to a couple games of the year, well, they're going to go to Stillman Valley Byron, but they're not going to go to Stillman Valley Lakeshore or whatever the game is that would occur. You know, the other thing, I was talking to an official here recently about game management this year, where that play clock in high school football this year goes to 40. So on run plays, my understanding then, you know, at the end of a game, you're talking about, you know, basically three run plays. You can run 40, 80, 120 seconds, right? 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to 25, 50, 75 seconds. Well, what about game management at the end of these games this year going to a 40-second play clock? That to me, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of attention on that, but, man, game management down the stretch, specifically in postseason games, that looks kind of interesting to me.
I've thought about it quite a bit. You know, I've always been fascinated with the clock and how you manage that time. It's beyond frustrating to me to watch an NFL game. How poorly, in my opinion, they got 75 assistant coaches on the sideline and nobody can watch the play clock and that sort of thing. Or they, you know, they're up big and they're snapping the ball 7 seconds into the clock. And you know, I've thought a lot about that. The ability to milk out a fourth quarter, you basically need 2-3 first downs, and you can darn near kill an entire quarter now with that thing. And, you know, just how quickly is the official going to start that clock right after the play is done and stuff? Because you can actually, you know, counting the time of the play, you can grind an awful lot of clock out quickly, and our games are not that long to start with. So, you know, I think some guys will definitely use that, and I assume most guys will use that to their advantage if you're up, and it's going to be a frustrating thing if you're on the other side of things, because it can definitely shorten games down now, even more than what we could before.
Yeah, I mean, if you're at the 5 minute mark of a game, and you get one first down, I mean you're in pretty good shape if that other sideline doesn't have any timeouts remaining. That's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's neat to see how people go about implementing that and so on. And yeah, there's been talk among more than a few of us that this is definitely going to change things, I think, far more than what people think it's going to.
All right. Well, Mike Lawler is good for the game. 22 years, and it's always great to get observations from people that do it the right way. And, you know, I tell Coach Dixon and a lot of the guys I get on, you know, these conversations are only the beginning. You know, you go out, if you're listening to this, you go out and continue the conversation. You try to figure out how we can change scheduling, make it better, make rivals play one another, whatever the case may be, or how you get more kids to play football, not only football, but more sports. How can the off-season schedule get better? There's a lot to talk about. I don't profess to have the right answer, that's for sure, but it's a starting point of the conversation. Coach, always appreciate it, man. You got a great program, and I do want to mention, because when Coach Lawler got in touch with me, he dropped a couple of old Alito names, and he mentioned Travis Boswell, a neighbor of mine, and I always like people when they drop names, because there's some classic names over the years. Oh, and the other thing I always remember about Stillman Valley, well, we always know about the midline beer, of course, trying to stop that, is it always seemed like you guys always had like a 120-pound like nose guard, and I'm like, well, we should be able to run by him, and then the kid wreaks this complete havoc on the game. So I just, and maybe it's not true that every year you had, but it always seemed like you had a wrecker like that could play football and cause problems for the other team. So those are kind of some of my observations about your program.
Yeah, we did. We had a long run of those, and still do. They're always, I call them kind of like the stray dog that you couldn't kill off, you know.
Yeah.
That didn't make much sense, but they could survive in there. And well, I just want to say thank you for having me on, and your great coverage over the years. And I think your part of the state is just great sports area. Still got that small town feel, and some of the, you know, name drop of some of the guys came contact with, Pat and John Elder from over that way is when I first got to know them, and Rick Amy at Rock Ridge, what a guy. Bill McCarty, you know, came up from Alito up to GK, just unbelievable guys and stuff, and so guys that really did things and do things the right way. Really have enjoyed our connection over the years, and I was honored to be on here today, and thanks for having me on.
All right, Mike Lawler, 22 years at Stillman Valley, 5 state titles. More coming up on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.